There's a drive to right center field, deep to the wall. Clear the deck. Cannonball coming. Spencer Horowitz, grand salami time. His third Pirate homer. You talk about a game-changing at bat. Spencer for hire.
I don't get that one. Maybe someone on the text line or YouTube does. Spencer for hire. 15-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. On a beautiful day in Pittsburgh, in Latrobe, it is 90 degrees right now, just the way Mike Tomlin likes it. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. PM team not all the way back together because Donnie was at this game today as part of our fan junket that went over to the game. So many people who work here. Intern Dom not invited. He is producing us instead.
He'd rather be here in the trenches with us. He wouldn't want to be over there sunning himself, possibly talking to women. He wants to be right in here.
Talking to women.
Well, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, you don't think he would be chatting up some of the people who work for us?
Well, that's
who are at the ballpark.
But why did you want to emphasize females in that? I'm confused by that point. What made you feel like?
Because we were talking before the show about Dom kind of painting himself as a guy who's got a lot of riz and a lot of, you know, cachet.
So you think
with the ladies at Syracuse,
like our sales staff here, would be drawn to Dom?
They would just
and
be like, "What a magnetic personality! This guy's so interesting."
Huh. All right,
I wouldn't be putting the riz on at a professional workout.
No, you have platonic riz though. I think you have fun riz. You give off good vibes.
Yes, but it's a professional circumstance.
I also want to congratulate the Pirates on capturing their first ever Leland Cup. They took out of six from the Tigers.
We got to get that ashtray taken care of.
Yep, I think it's over at Chartier's Country Club, where it stays during the offseason, especially if teams split, which they have the last few years because they only were playing four games against each other.
Spencer for hire, the YouTube chat has exploded. Pony, it is a drama crime series from the 80s.
Yeah,
Spencer for hire.
That sounds dumb and nobody cared about it, and somehow it got on Greg Brown's radar. Anyways.
Dumb.
Yep.
Three seasons, brother.
Yeah, that's not a great run. We've been on the air together for much longer than that. Okay. So with this trade deadline thing, Dom, do I just read it or do you have something you have to play for it? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I have something. You want me to play it right now?
And then do I still read it, or how does this work?
I'll play the sound, you read it, and then
but
you
can get
in. But
is it just what is said in the sounder? In which case, why would I read it?
From what I've been told from our boss, I play the sound, you read the thing,
so you play the sound, and then I just say what is said in the sound.
Oh, this is riveting theater to watch the two of you Syracuse big brains figure this one out.
Play it, and then I'll just say it again.
Who's on the move? Another Major League trade presented by Globe Airport Parking.
That's Who's on the Move, another Major League trade presented by Globe Airport Parking. Yeah. There are no trades that are happening yet with the Pirates, but there is this from Noah Hyles. This is great fodder as you leave the ballpark with your brooms and whatnot. Sources: Pirates O'Neill Cruz drawing interest as trade deadline approaches. More from Hyles. Sources tell the PG the Pirates have received many calls on Cruz, who boasts 3 years of remaining club control. Arbitration starting next year. It's worth noting the Pirates are not actively shopping Cruz, but are listening to what other teams are willing to offer. Then points out at this moment in time, there have been no teams connected to Cruz. So he does not know who these teams are, but there are a lot of teams who are trying to swindle the Pirates because they see O'Neill Cruz and they must think that they can fix something in Cruz that the Pirates cannot, that they can unlock. Maybe it's the effort thing, but also it's got to be a consistency thing.
The famous Joey Bats hitching his swing that the Pirates and Phillies couldn't figure out and Toronto did. Or whatever the hell the Brewers figured out with Quinn Priester, who now looks like a very good pitcher.
So this is one of those situations that I don't love. Because on one hand, I say, well, if the Pirates aren't going to turn O'Neill Cruz into that type of player, you might as well trade him. But I also have the fear that if they do trade him, the team is going to fix him that gets him, and you're going to have egg on your face. You're going to look bad, and it's going to be another one of these situations like we relive every year where guys leave the Pirates and get much better. The latest example of that, now this is a pitcher, not a hitter, is what Quinn Priester is doing this year for the Brewers while Nick York toils in AAA for the Pirates. So that is the issue. The Pirates are the team that the rest of Major League Baseball looks at and says, we can fleece these guys. They don't know how to maximize their talent other than schemes. And we can go there and we can take advantage of this team. And so I am very pessimistic about Cruz reaching a ceiling here. And I am also pessimistic that the trade package they got back, they would not be able to take, they would not be able to turn those young players into promising stars of the future for the Pirates.
Which is a pretty strong argument to fire the general manager and all of the people who are doing player development for him.
Yes, but you get conflicting reports on that. Some people think he's as good as gone. Other people think he will be back. I still lean he's going to be gone. I still lean in that direction until I see the Pirates make a move that makes me believe that Ben Cherington does have a long runway. Trading Adam Frazier does not signal that. If he trades David Bednar, Mitch Keller, or in this case, O'Neill Cruz, well, then I will feel differently because you would not let a lame duck general manager make that kind of trade. You wouldn't.
I mean, you wouldn't let a lame duck guy make that trade. I also just think the fact that they are picking up the phone and listening to people ask them about O'Neill Cruz says plenty. Because it would suggest a level of disenchantment with the player internally, where even if they know somebody else might get it out of him, they have already reached, on some small level, a level of dissatisfaction with him or frustration with him, where they're willing to at least hear somebody try to knock their socks off, knowing that if they were to make one of these deals, he could end up looking like a 40-40 player, and they will look as dumb as they have looked on all these other accounts. And this one, by the way, would look a lot worse than Priester, who right now has become a quality starting pitcher with the Brewers after one stop with Boston, because Cruz is the dude everyone watched hit the ball 500 feet at the Home Run Derby. It would make him look even worse. Oh, you had that guy who was touched by the gods with basic athletic traits to play this sport, and all you could do was not figure out a defensive position, not get the focus there 100% of the time, and not teach him how to even competently hit left-handed pitching? Cool. Like, it just, even talking about it on these terms bums me out all the way around. I don't want the GM that I think should have already been fired to make the deal. I don't have any belief that the GM and his player development system can make the player really better than he is at this point. And they seem to have come to some of the same conclusions, which actually makes me think that they're wrong too somehow.
Yeah.
If they're coming to these conclusions, they're probably wrong. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. It sucks.
Why? They
got O'Neill Cruz for a left-handed relief specialist.
On an expiring deal. Great trade by Neil Huntington.
It could have been Rincon for Giles again. Instead, it has become Rincon for Marcus Giles, the crappier one.
Are there Giles out there? I think Marcus Giles
Corey, Giles, the Jay Giles band.
Giles with the Braves had like a 45 home run season.
Did he?
I think so.
I guess my point is
we're getting your point, Malzie.
Even the fact that we are talking about this and that they have picked up the phone just signifies another failure.
It's not just Cruz, obviously. Mitch Keller pitched what might be his final game in Pittsburgh last night. He only has, if you do the pitch every fifth day thing, he only has one more start left before the trade deadline, and that would be Monday in San Francisco if everybody takes the turn on schedule here the next time through the rotation. Here he is after the game last night and all the trade conjecture.
Obviously, it's going around. It comes around every July. You definitely hear the noise, but yeah, you just got to move past it, and there's nothing I can do about it. So, I mean, it's not like I can tell them where I want to be traded or want to be, or if I do get traded, I can't say where I'm going or anything. So there's no point in worrying about it. I recognize that it's there. I mean, it happens to everybody. I mean, we kind of jokes about it a little bit, but yeah, I don't think there's anything to like stress over, because like I said, there's nothing we can do about it.
And he has to deal with this every July, it seems like, because ever since he's signed that contract, he's become expensive as far as Pirates contracts go, and the team isn't in position to win. So that's why his name gets bandied about, although in this situation,
he's an actual valuable commodity.
Yeah,
right now.
I think we'll have an answer on Ben Cherington's license to make deals very shortly. If Keller is scratched on Monday, that means he's getting traded.
Correct.
If he's not, then that leaves the door open that he's going to be here.
And they're only going to let Cherington make the expiring contracts,
the IKF,
the
Andrew
minor
Heaney,
deals.
Tommy Pham deals.
The deals that inherently are not going to get you as much.
If you actually do trust Cherington to do his job, and I'm saying the Pirates because the fans don't, then you can't let Keller take the mound again for this team. Because if something were to happen, like, you'd lose a very precious commodity and trade chip. And your season's down the toilet. So, you know, what's, like, let's say you scratch him and then for whatever reason no one knocks your socks off with an offer. Okay, you just skipped one turn in the rotation for him and he'll pick things back up in August. Not the end of the world. But I would anticipate that, I think there's a better than 50, well, I guess I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I don't think the Pirates are going to give him the ability to make that trade.
Noah Hiles was on with me yesterday and said he thinks they are going to trade him.
And Mackey disagrees, and I think DK does a little bit too. I think the Dejan articles have suggested that as well. But
that he's not going to be allowed to.
He's not going to be allowed to, and that really we could see Cherington fired before the season is even over.
I mean, I want Mackey and Dejan to be right.
Yes.
But at the same time, this team is so in need, if they are going to have any prayer of doing anything while Paul Skeens is a member of their roster, an organization, they are in such desperate need of some sort of substantive bat or bats in that lineup. I want to see Mitch Keller get dealt in principle because he's the one guy they have that could fetch that.
Well, it's going to put a lot of pressure, if it does go that way, on the guy who gets the job here once the season is over, because that guy is going to have to... You would think.
It's not going to be you get to come in and do it your way. It's here's what we have. You need to try to figure out how to make this work.
Well, that's what I mean. And that would probably require trading Keller months into taking the job before next season even starts.
Dude, they're such a mess. They're such a mess. And it
and
all
they just
goes,
swept and it, the best team in the American League.
I know. I know. After getting swept by the worst team in the American League, a literal historic event of 45 years in the making. And I will just stress again, Bob Nutting being indecisive about Cherington specifically this offseason has set this entire messy situation in motion.
One ball, two strikes. Carmen Majimski for the Pirates, the pitch. Swing and a miss, struck him out. Pirates sweep the Tigers. Raise the Jolly Roger. All three games.
That's baseball, as John Sterling used to say. A longtime Yankees announcer, not really a deep quote or anything. I don't know why it gets attached to him. Just saying that when weird things happen, that's baseball. I don't know why that's like looked at as Confucius knowledge, but that's
it's the whole America's pastime that it's somehow special and more different than everybody else. You know,
swept by the White Sox, sweep the Tigers. The Pirates' season has had a lot of this. They crush the Mets and Cardinals, and they give it all back on a road trip before the All-Star break. Now we've got the trade deadline 8 days away, and no better person to talk to you about that than our next guest, 93.7 The Fan's MLB analyst, Matt Clement. On the Fan Hotline, brought to you by Sullivan Super Service. Matt, we now have this story in the Post-Gazette that dropped in the last hour about O'Neill Cruz. And I said to Chris, like, if I'm O'Neill Cruz, I probably want to get out of here. Mid-season, they made me go from shortstop to center field last year. He'd never played the position before. We see that he's got raw power and potential, but you know he hasn't lived up to it here at all. He probably wants a change of scenery. What's your reaction to all that?
You know, that's a great way to put it, and probably a change of scenery would be great for him. Think of Tyler Glasnow. You know, a change of scenery did him a world of good too, And probably another point to add on to what you're saying is there's a like he's supposed to be saving this team and carrying this team, and he really hasn't lived up to the expectations on his side of things. But at the same time, like, that's more pressure that he ends up going somewhere else that somebody's going to give up some big prospects for, maybe. You know, he goes somewhere else where he isn't the focal point and can just relax and play, where – it's kind of been like, okay, he's the guy here, and it hasn't went well. I'm probably, you know, probably sick of hearing people talk about how he hasn't performed. So interesting, you know, from his standpoint, probably thinking that way. But like I said last week when we were talking, you got to give something up to get something. And the Pirates are in a weird spot. They have all these people that are going to give up and, you know, pick up a minor leaguer here or there and hopefully hit the jackpot on. But, like, if you want to get players to change this dynamic and, like, this reboot we're going to build around pitching and get some different bats that we can go with, I mean, who better to give up, I guess, but it's risky because he could end up being, you know, if
could be a superstar.
Through, you look dumb.
If somebody unlocks it, it's a superstar kind of player and talent. Well, here's the other question I have about Cruz. He has played approximately, Matt, I think it's almost right on the number, two full seasons of Major League Baseball in terms of actual games played in the bigs. He's not young. I mean, he's on the wrong side of 25, headed towards 30. He's 26 years old. How much time, like, I mean, all things being equal, all players are different, but, like, broadly speaking, is two seasons worth of games enough to know what somebody sort of is or isn't in the big leagues? Is that a decent enough sample size for an everyday player?
Yeah, and the Pirates, here's the thing, the Pirates are dealing with, when things aren't going good, you're dealing with different circumstances than you know, Gavin Lux with the Dodgers, where we, you know, we can just, you know, put him at the bottom of the order, let him do his thing, whatever the case may be. He's supposed to be the guy. It hasn't went well. And as 2 years of sample size as the headliner guy, probably isn't enough, but is enough at the same time. Not to be on the fence with the question, but, like, you're in a pretty strange situation with this right now. And again, like, me and myself, it's like, if he unlocks, we're going to look really dumb. I mean, how many people have complained about
the
Chris Archer deal, right? And how Meadows had some good years in there, and Glasnow became a guy that's been unbelievable. And this is even more surefire that this dude has a chance of, like, being like the face of baseball type dude if he goes somewhere, if it unlocks. So it's a risky proposition. You got to get some real dudes. Like to me, these deals where you're talking like him, you got to get, like, you know, a Dominguez and a Volpe from the Yankees and maybe a prospect, something big that comes in and, like, has a chance to really replace him.
Matt Clement with us here on 93.7 The Fan, baseball analyst who I mistakenly said was an NL All-Star, was an American League All-Star in 05. And then I said to Chris, I think you struck out Beltran, got Castillo to pop out, and I did not remember who the third guy was in that inning. Am I right? Am I close?
You are right on Beltran, because I've told my sons when they're playing the MLB game, the show game, that Beltran has a great card right now, supposedly, and he was, like, one of the worst people I had to face. He was really hard for me to get out, and sure enough, All-Star game, who rolls to the plate? And I actually struck him out.
Yeah, okay.
You remember on what pitch, what kind of pitch you threw him to get him?
I think it was a curve.
I would guess it's my slider. You know, if I got him out, it was on my slider. I know I faced David Eckstein that inning also. Don't remember if it was a 1-2-3 inning where I got him out.
Yeah, let's be honest. He was a very visible try-hard guy. Let's just call it what it was. He looked like I would look throwing the ball across the infield with every ounce of might he had behind it. Good, solid little baseball player, but, man,
part of two world champions.
He looked like it was maximum effort to do anything on the field.
Yeah, he made himself into a nice little career for you know, what he had. Absolutely.
Matt, so Keller pitched last night. We just played before we brought you on what he said about all the trade rumors that are out there. And I said to Chris, I think we'll have our answer before he gets traded. If he gets scratched from Monday's start in San Francisco, that means they think he's gone. If I were in his shoes, I mean, what, like, I don't know if I'd want to, like, that's a weird spot to be in. You know, the Pirates probably shouldn't pitch him again, Matt, if they think they're going to trade him, because what if he gets hurt in that game? What are your thoughts on things?
Agree. You know, if he's going to, we're going to know if he's scratched. If something's going down, and actually it could still not go down, but if something is on the horizon that looks like it's going to go down and it's close, you don't want to take that chance at that point, because, you know, that's a bad, negative situation either way. You know, if the Pirates would throw him and he would get hurt, that hurts them both ways. So, yeah, and I for being Keller, I think he just wants to pitch.
Yeah.
So if you're asking me to put myself in his shoes, He just wants to pitch. He's pitching good right now.
Yep.
He's now 4-10. You know, but the last like 6-7 game sample outing has been phenomenal for him.
So he doesn't want his routine thrown off right now.
Yeah, he just wants to keep going. Like, what's going to happen to him is out of his hands, really. And you know, for the Pirates, the other side for the Pirates is, you know, you could possibly, you know, he pitches even better. Maybe that adds to what you can get, but I don't think you can take that risk at the same time.
Matt, if you were dangling him and wanted to trade him, like, what would you need to get in return for you to feel like it was a fair deal for both sides?
I'd love to get, to me, I think that, again, this is trading something to get something. That's the kind of the term everybody asks me about what the Pirates should do that I keep saying. Like, this is.
Does it need to be a guy who's already in the bigs, or would you take somebody who's hugely hyped prospect who just hasn't cracked into the bigs yet?
I think that it would be nice to be able to get both, right? And probably would be a lesser big league dude if you're getting a majorly hyped prospect, if that makes sense. Like, if you're getting that top 3-4 guy in an organization, like the Cubs guy, I think it's Cassie, the left fielder or whatever,
that's
really hot. Like, if you're getting him, man, if I can add, like, you know, somebody that's in their lineup, maybe a platoon guy or whatever the case may be out there on their team that can come help this offense immediately, you know, maybe that's the kind of the combination I go for in that situation. But I think it'd go either way. It's just like, again, like the Pirate fans don't want to hear it right now because things just haven't went so well offensively. So to bring back nothing that looks great or a bunch of a package of four guys that you're hoping hits, you know, is going to be hard for the fan base to stomach, I think. So getting somebody that can crack this lineup right now, to me, would be nice. But, I mean, if you can get one of those top three, you know, Cubs are trying to win a World Series right now. They're short on starting pitching right now. You can get somebody like that dude, then I packaged around that.
Matt, are you aware that somebody who was your contemporary pitched in the major leagues last night at 45 years old? Rich Hill. His 14th team, he tied Edwin Jackson for the major league record. He has been on 7 different teams since he turned 40, including the Pirates.
I did see that last night, and I had a former trainer that tried to, or physical therapist from Boston that tried to connect us because said we would get along well when he was in Pittsburgh that year. We text back and forth a few times, never were able to connect with my schedule with my kids in the summer, but really – really, I mean, what a testament to him, man. Really cool. And to go out there and go against the Cubs and give up one run. I mean, just amazing, right? And good for him. And I've heard nothing but unbelievable stuff about Rich Hill. And so to see him back in baseball and having a chance, pretty awesome.
He's getting Major League hitters out with AARP magazine before the game, Matt. I mean, this is ridiculous.
We're getting to Jamie Moyer territory, right? I mean, think about that. Jamie Moyer is 4 years older than Rich Hill when he was pitching.
Yeah. More impressive that Moyer was still pitching at that age or that Julio Franco was still getting hits in his late 40s.
I think Moyer, because he was, you know, you can roll up there and hit balls and not run fast and put some ice packs on your knees and stuff. But like when your arm's still working at age 49 and you're throwing like mid 80s in a game that's throwing mid 90s.
Could you pump it up to mid-80s right now if we gave you, like, a little bit of time to warm up?
Just let you get loose, yeah.
Mid-80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could get to mid-80s.
Could you touch 90 if we gave you a long time to warm up?
No chance.
Are you aware, you'll like this, of who Jamie Moyer's father-in-law is?
Digger Phelps.
Let's go. You know your stuff. All right, Matt, good stuff. We'll talk again next week. I can't get one by you.
All right, man. Thanks, guys.
See ya. Matt Clement, our MLB analyst.
No, I feel like an idiot. I didn't know that.
Really?
Why would I care who Jamie Moyer's father-in-law
was? I mean, they
was?
Only mentioned it like in every game he pitched in, but that's all right.
I wasn't sitting there watching random Jamie Moyer starts unless they were against the Pirates. I'm not a Jamie Moyer historian here necessarily. Clearly not like you who could remember the pitch that Matt Clement used to get Carlos Beltran out.
I would trade O'Neill Cruz for Volpe and Dominguez. However, if Ben Cherington made that trade, I would say, oh, this looks like a good trade, but I would expect Volpe to go into the longest slump of his career, Dominguez to never turn out to be a good player, and O'Neill Cruz to hit behind Aaron Judge and launch 50 home runs into
that short porch in right field. He would just pepper the middle deck in the Bronx and become a hero in that.
We're about 20 minutes away from Omar Khan, Steelers GM, with practice starting tomorrow. We're on the eve of Steelers training camp. What is he saying about this team? His first public comments on the Minka Fitzpatrick trade coming up. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Mike, devil in the details sometimes with these contracts. You've looked at TJ Watt here. Did he get a better deal than Myles Garrett?
Well, I mean, he got a strong deal. He's got 3 years fully guaranteed from signing. He's got a total commitment of 4 years. Not that he's going to be looking for a fourth contract, a significant one when it's all said and done. And there's an early trigger in the final year that isn't guaranteed at like $15 million, so they've got to make a decision early. So he's got three solid years with the Steelers. And so much for the talk about them being concerned that he's slipping, he's getting older, whatever. They made, and they rarely do it for non-quarterbacks, they made a firm at signing 3 year fully guaranteed commitment.
Who won this deal then? Is it more Watt beat kind of, if somebody wins this deal, it's Watt won more than the Steelers did?
Well,
to the extent of like looking
Watt
at his age, his performance. Yeah, his age, his performance,
it's
everything
a point
else.
That J.J. Watt made, he didn't talk about T.J. specifically. He was on with McAfee a month or so ago. And the idea that the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. It's always that way. Look at what the Cowboys are dealing with Micah Parsons. If they had done it last year, it would have been a lot less than what it's going to be now. Now, in the interim, you save money because you pay a guy less. But even just in one offseason, if the Steelers had swooped in as soon as the 2024 season had ended, they could have gotten T.J. Watt for less than $42 million a year and for less than, what is it, $108 million fully guaranteed at signing. He got the most fully guaranteed at signing of any non-quarterback ever, and he got more than, like, Brock Purdy got fully guaranteed at signing.
What do you think that says on a macro level about the way the Steelers are doing business now, Mike?
Look, they typically are smart about things. I just think they let this one, as they focused on other deals, they let this one simmer longer than it should have, and it ended up blowing up on them between the Max Crosby deal and then the big one, the Myles Garrett deal, that pushed the new money high bar to $40 million a year. You know, we talked in the past, to the extent they were thinking that was an aberration, no, it's the trend. And that's where it goes. And the money's always going to keep going up. As long as the cap keeps going up, the money's going to keep going up. And in any given offseason, the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to get. But it's, look, they need him. They need him. If they're serious about trying to win a playoff game for the first time since before he was drafted, they need him.
Is it good business still in the NFL to be spending as much as the Steelers are on defense, specifically on that side of the ball, given the way the rules are, given the way the sport just has trended now for probably 20 years or thereabouts, Mike?
Well, when you get all three of your quarterbacks in 2024 under contract for less than what Mason Rudolph got for 1 year in Tennessee, and then when you get a Hall of Famer first ballot, still a guy who's in the top half of the league for $13 million, which is criminal in today's NFL, the top of the market, 60. You've got the luxury to spend that kind of money on the other side of the ball. So they've been fortunate at the quarterback position. And, you know, then if you draft a guy, you keep the total dollars at quarterback low as well, if that's what they do next year. So not having a quarterback that's making top of the market money or close to it allows you to pump money elsewhere, specifically on defense.
Mike, you just said it's criminal how little the Steelers are paying Aaron Rodgers. Is that the sentiment around the league, that they got an unbelievable deal on him?
I just assume it's a given. Like, $13 million is an unbelievable deal. Justin Fields, it costs $20 million this year for the Jets. Russell Wilson is guaranteed like $10.5, $11 million. So, yeah, in this NFL, not that long ago, $20 million made you the highest paid quarterback in the game. But in today's NFL, we've got multiple guys making more than $50 million a year, where the market is 60. Yes, to get a guy like Aaron Rodgers for $13 million, it's a hell of a bargain. And when you find someone like that, it gives you an opportunity to compete. It gives you an edge over the other teams, because other teams have to deal with the more conventional reality that you're only getting a good quarterback cheap if he's in the first 3 years of a rookie contract.
Isn't the counterargument, too, they got an unbelievable deal that if he was anywhere near the Aaron Rodgers that was winning MVPs a couple of years ago, he would not have been available to them at such an unbelievable bargain rate?
Well, yes and no. Look, he gave up $35 million walking through the door 2 years ago with the Jets. Just gave it up. After he was traded, after he was on the team, hey, we got to do something about your contract. There was a big payment to. Okay, he gave up $35 million. Now, I think he did it as kind of a loose quid pro quo that would give him a seat at the table for, you know, every move they made and make him the de facto GM. But this time around, he would have gotten more. He would have gotten more than $13 million if he wanted it.
Like, what now, do you think would have been the going rate for him if the market were paying him what his play suggests he's probably worth? Where do you think that number would have landed, at least per year, Mike?
Right now, I mean, 30, I think. So if he's worth 30 right now, based on how he played down the stretch last year for the Jets, that's giving up 17.
Okay.
Mike, that's $17 million you can spend on another guy.
We're obviously most interested in the Steelers, but we're also attentive to what's going on with the Bengals because they are looked at as competition, obviously. And you've got Hendrickson just flat out leaving, something that you would recommend, going all the way to Jacksonville and just saying, screw it, I'm not going to show up to camp. And then still the bizarre nature in what is a slotted system where this is supposed to make things easier. Their first round pick is unsigned with no light at the end of the tunnel. So is this just Mike Brown being like the old, stodgy, curmudgeonly, frugal owner that he has been labeled as for decades, or is there more to this story that I'm missing?
You know, it's dawning on me this time around. It's not about money as much as it's about power. It's about showing the players who's in charge and who's boss. And with Trey Hendrickson, I don't necessarily recommend this holdout. With other teams, yes, if the holdout was going to work. Like Micah Parsons, I think, should not have shown up for training camp. I think the Cowboys are going to screw him. Once you show up, the team gets all the leverage because you can hold out until the Tuesday after week 10 and still show up. If you're there and leave, you got 5 days to come back or they can shut you down for the whole year, shut you down and pay you nothing. Hendrickson should have considered doing the best deal he could because I don't think the Bengals are going to blink. I think Hendrickson's going to end up being the Hassan Reddick this year where he'll sit out, he'll give up the daily fines, he'll give up game checks if he doesn't show up. I just don't see the Bengals giving in. And with Shamar Stewart, this ridiculous fight over esoteric language in the contract about the consequences of a default on your guaranteed money, language that they used last year for Amarius Mims all of a sudden isn't good enough. Language they used this year for both T. Higgins and Jamar Chase all of a sudden isn't good enough. They're trying to cram this new language through on Shamar Stewart without giving him any sort of additional concession. That's where this has gone sideways for the Bengals. Language they've used up until their two receivers, they used that old language. Now we have to change it. Well, what do I get? Nothing. Sign it. Shut up. Play football. Sign it. That's their attitude.
Wow.
Mike, the interesting thing about what's going on with Stewart specifically is the other development that I've noticed, it feels like it's actually pro players here. All these second round picks suddenly are getting fully guaranteed contracts when that hasn't been the norm. What light can you shed on that? Because the Steelers obviously didn't have a second round pick this year. They traded it to go get DK Metcalf.
Well, and I'm waiting to see the full array of what the second round picks have gotten. The NFLPA sends out reports that show, for example, the percentage of the contract that was fully guaranteed last year at a given slot, the percentage this year. But the NFLPA is under siege, and that's a different.
Oh, my God. I was going to ask you about J.C. Treader. You and Pablo Torre are like Woodward and Bernstein right now.
But the issue with the second rounders, you know, people say, oh, football players should have fully guaranteed contracts. Well, every first rounder does. Every first-round pick now gets a four-year fully guaranteed contract. This is the first year the team stepped out of line in round two, and it started with the Texans, and then it continued, and it's deeper into the round now. And that's what a lot of this was as the holdouts continued for more than a few guys. They held firm, and they got fully guaranteed four-year contracts. So even though veterans have a hard time getting fully guaranteed contracts, more and more rookies are getting four-year fully guaranteed contracts as they walk through the league. And the second rounders had a lot to do with that this year.
Mike, are you able to add any more color to what is this breaking news story in Cleveland where they had a helmet revealed today, a new brown helmet, and at this event, a photographer fell into the
Lake Erie.
Yes, yeah, did you see this?
I was going to use that later in the show, but let's bring it up. Yeah, the
Mike,
guy just
It has gone viral.
Fell.
Only the Browns, where they have this celebratory day. We are showing you something cool and new about our team, and a photographer fell into the lake while it was happening.
And it wasn't a bit. It wasn't part of the dude
it
wipes.
It was windy, and the whole thing, the cover off, the tarp off of it, and maybe
they took
momentum
they took like
from
the
that.
It was like an art project or a sculpture where it has like a light tarp covering it, and they're pulling it off, and just this guy is on the far corner, seemingly unbothered by all this, and he just goes backward into Lake Erie, Mike.
Oh God!
I think
it's everything but the river being on fire.
Honestly, yeah. I think it's got to be a quick write up on PFT. I think it was tailor made for Pro Football Talk.
I didn't know about it. I just can't look. The brown helmets, and I remember when I was a kid and I first became aware of football, like, why are the Browns' helmets orange? I was always confused by that. But now I know why they're orange, because they look awful when they're brown. And when the whole thing is sponsored by Dude Wipes, how can you not make the association that everyone is going to make when they see a brown
helmet?
Very
well said.
That is a very good
Mike,
point.
We'll talk again next week. Thank you.
See you guys.
Football's back. Mike.